Hey, my name's Otis Gray, host of the Daily Book Club, a daily podcast where I read wonderful old books one chapter at a time. Simple as that. Whether you want to get engaged and lost in a fascinating story that has stood the test of time, or just relax to a good book, listen to the Daily Book Club to get wrapped up or unwind during your day. We'll read classic stories like Pride and Prejudice, The Enchanted April, The Wind in the Willows, beautiful stories all told from start to finish. And you can even do a real book club. Tune into the Daily Book Club Discord and discuss the readings with other book club listeners. However you want to listen, it's your choice. Subscribe to the Daily Book Club on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere else. New episodes every single day. So sit back, relax, and get lost in the Daily Book Club.
This episode of Amateur Traveler is sponsored by DK Eyewitness Travel Guides. These colorful guidebooks are filled with great information and are one of my favorite guidebooks. I have 25 of them right here on my bookshelf. Learn more at dk.com. Amateur Traveler, episode 471. Today, the Amateur Traveler talks about lots of barbecue, live music, and the LBJ Presidential Library as we go to Austin, Texas. Welcome to the Amateur Traveler. I'm your host, Chris Christensen. Just 2 weeks until the 10th anniversary of the Amateur Traveler as this show is recorded, but we'll talk about that later. First, let's talk about Texas. I'd like to welcome to the show Mike Henshaw from NomadicTexan.com, who's come to talk to us about Austin, Texas. Mike, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much for having me, Chris.
And you lived in Austin at least until recently. How many years did you live in Austin?
I actually was one of the few people in Austin that was born there a long, long time ago. I lived there for about 2 years, and then I got married, moved away, and came back and have lived there for 20 years before I moved.
Oh, wow. You must have seen quite a few changes in the Austin area.
My grandmother, before she passed, lived there, and I think there was probably 50,000 people at that point in time, and there is now 700,000 plus in the city proper, and probably almost 2 million with the suburbs and surrounding area.
Excellent. And why should somebody go to Austin, Texas?
It is a fun place. It has wonderful food. Of course, this is all my biased opinion, but it has wonderful food. It has great music. It's the music capital of the world, is one of the phrases they say about Austin. There's a lot of outdoor activities, a lot of historical buildings and venues and museums. But I guess from my standpoint, the music when I was younger probably was the biggest attraction. And now it's more food, because there is some wonderful food that I don't think people know about.
Excellent. Well, what order should we tackle that in? What would you recommend someone do, see and eat when they come to Austin?
See and eat. If you want to start with see, I've got plenty of things. Most lists will tell you about the bats that fly out from South Congress Bridge on the river. That really is a phenomenal thing to see and witness. But one thing people don't know half the time is you don't stand under the bats when they take off.
I would have thought that would be self-evident, actually.
Well, you would think that, but it's amazing how many people that visit for the first time actually stand right under it. In my opinion, the best way to do it is to rent a boat if you have a party or a group of people and go down about quarter to half a mile and watch them as they exit the bridge from that standpoint. But it is kind of a unique thing to see, and I don't think too many cities, at least in the state, have that attribute, and it's really kind of neat. Everybody that comes to Austin I used to take, and they were all goggle-eyed about it, so that was one thing. I would encourage people to take a dip in Barton Springs Pool, which is a little fresh springs off the river that maintains a 70-degree temperature year-round. It doesn't matter if it's the middle of winter or the middle of summer or whatever. It's a fun place to go.
Now, you say the middle of summer or the middle of winter. You have more summer than you do winter, as I recall.
Oh, yes, sir. I think we really have two seasons, 9 months of summer and 3 months of fall. I don't even know if it ever gets to be winter there. So,
what is the best time of year, in your opinion, to come to Austin?
I would go in the spring because of the wildflowers blooming. The fall is temperature-wise is okay also, but the spring to me is the best. And it also has a lot of things like South by Southwest going on in the spring. So there's several reasons to come in the spring.
Well, let's talk a little bit about South by there. Do you recommend people come at the time of South by or avoid Austin at the time of South by? And I think there are arguments for both.
Yes, there are. And that's what I was going to say. It kind of depends on what your preferences are. If you like music, by all means, come. There are bands, probably 3,000 plus every year that come in for that. It's growing. And Austin has gotten to the point where it's very difficult to get a hotel room unless you book it way out ahead of time. So right. If you're a fan of music and want to come, please make sure you go out about 6 months minimum and book yourself a hotel room.
Well, and they get the pop-up hotels and the other things where things turn into hotels during that time of year that are not normally hotels, which I thought was interesting.
That and couch surfing really goes to the roof. They ask people that live in Austin and the surrounding areas to invite the musicians and other people into their homes and put them up because there are just literally not enough hotel rooms.
And well, the hotel rooms get a little pricey around that time of year, too.
I didn't want to go there, but it's supply and demand.
Yep.
So that's kind of the way it is then. You're right. They do go up a little bit, and it's a shame, but that's
and
business.
We say up a little bit. I want to say they're about triple, depending on probably where you are and how close you are to downtown.
That may be being kind okay. in some cases. But South by Southwest is more than just music. It's also, there's a film portion now that has become pretty huge, and it's like that film festival.
Sundance.
Yeah, where they bring all the new independent films out and stuff. Well, that's what's happening in Austin for about a week, also in addition to the music. And there are just different things that are starting to evolve out of that. It's become almost a month-long process now, South by Southwest.
And if we're not coming during South by, let's go back to you had a recommendation of places that we should be seeing.
Oh, yeah. I've got a good laundry list for sure. One of the things that I think may not be really highlighted on a lot of things to do or guidebooks and stuff is Mount Bonnell. I think it's got 100 steps or something like that. It's about an 800-foot climb, and it's on the river. And you take your time getting up if you're as old as I am because it is a little bit of a hike. But when you get up and you see the view over the Colorado River, it's breathtaking. I mean, it's amazing to sit there and look out over the landscape. So I would recommend that if you're in good enough shape to climb 100 steps or 800 feet. Okay. Sixth Street is probably on everybody's list, every guidebook, et cetera. And it kind of resembles Bourbon Street, I would think, in Maryland. Mm-hmm. It's got a seedy side and it's got a good side, and it is what it is, but there's a lot of wonderful attractions and things to see on Sixth Street.
And some particular attractions or places that you would recommend?
Yeah, if you like comedy, they have Esther's Follies, which is really a good comedy show. When I was managing a group of retail outlets in Austin, I was based in Austin. They always pick somebody out of the audience to make an example out of. And somehow the people that worked for me volunteered me to go do that. And it was pretty embarrassing, but it was all in good fun. But it's a funny show, and they are pretty well up to date on current events, and they make fun of what's happening out in the world, especially when it comes to the government. But I would definitely go to Esther's Follies if I was down there. There's lots of good music, and some of it's in good venues, and some of it's a little bit lower down the totem pole. Mm-hmm. But you can find just about every kind of music that you want to listen to down there. There's also a couple of great hotels if you want to stay in historical places. The Intercontinental, which is, I think, about a block off of Sixth Street, if I'm not mistaken, is wonderful decor on the inside. And the Driscoll Hotel, which has been around, it was bought by an old cattle guy back in the 1800s and rebuilt and has been rebuilt several times since then, is fantastic when you go inside. You look at the lobby, it's filled with antiques. It's got all kinds of stained glass chandeliers, etc. And You go to the bar and there's a lot of etched glass. And on the way, you have all these old 45s that are encased in glass and protected in these different firearms that are back from those days, especially like, I don't know if they go back as far as the Alamo, but there are some very old, old firearms and different things. I mean, they have a saddle, if I'm not mistaken, that's back from those times and just mostly the firearms, but it's really a wonderful place to go and look if you like old architecture. So.
And you mentioned by one of the cattle guys, I don't know it to be true, but I sort of have this picture that that part of Texas does really go back to the big cattle ranches as being the first big revenue source before, for instance, the university now, which has a lot of impact on Austin culture.
Right, correct. And oil came in, I think, in between the cattle and the university. Okay. Kind of. And cattle really still, I mean, one of the things that kind of I have to laugh at on every guidebook list and stuff is get a good steak. Well, I think there's probably a lot of places in Texas that you can get a good steak, and you definitely can in Austin. There are probably 5 or 6 five-star steak restaurants.
Is there one that you recommend? Do you have a favorite?
Sullivan's down on 4th Street has probably, my favorite is a ribeye. And they have a wonderful ribeye that's bone-in. So that would be my first recommendation. Ruth Chris is pretty good. There's just lots of different chains that are there.
Excellent. Let's take a break here and hear from our sponsor, who is DK Eyewitness Travel Guides. I was curious to see that DK already has a guidebook out on Cuba. So I was looking at the preview on Amazon.com. Like all of the DK travel guides, they have it broken down by regions. Each region has an introduction and a regional map, detailed information on each site in the region, and then the top sites are given 2 or more pages. Historic buildings are dissected to reveal their interiors, while museums have color-coded floor plans to help you locate the most interesting features. That's one of the things I love about the DK Eyewitness travel guides, that don't just tell me things, but show me as well. And this being the guidebook on Cuba, they even have a breakaway diagram on the Cuban cigar. The historic portion of the book covers everything from pirates and buccaneers to sugar, slaves, plantation, and then, of course, information about the Communist Revolution and the structure of the government today. You can get your own copy of the DK Eyewitness Travel Guides, including the guidebook on Cuba, at DK.com. Where do we go after 6th Street?
Well, after 6th Street, there's Zilker Park, especially if you're there during South by Southwest, because they have about 6 stages, I think it is, out there that various bands perform on. If you come at Christmas time for about 3 or 4 weeks, they have a wonderful walk-through Christmas deal where they set up all kinds of lights, and the centerpiece is this gargantuan Christmas tree that you can walk around in circles underneath and get a little busy, but it's gorgeous. And they have little booth type deals set up where everybody does the thing for Christmas, and it's wonderful. Besides that, in the Zilker Park area is the Botanical Gardens, and probably the best portion of that in my mind is the Japanese gardens. They're really detailed and they're really authentic Japanese plants. And if you're a plant person, I highly recommend you go to the Botanical Garden section of Zilker Park.
Same park where they record the Austin City Limits TV show with the live music from Austin?
No, now they have an indoor facility on Austin City Limits, it used to be in a university building up on the top, and it held about 500 people. And because of the popularity of it and because it was just getting too tight, I mean, so many people were getting angry because they couldn't get tickets and stuff like that. Sure. Expanded and built one about 3 blocks away. Its own facility. It's got, I don't know, 2,500 seating, something like that. And it's usually filled no matter who's playing. They've got a statue of Willie Nelson out front, which is kind of apropos since he was very instrumental in helping the Texas cowboy music, or whatever you want to call it, mm-hmm. rock and roll cowboy, get started back in the 70s. And he plays with them pretty often. Now, Zilker Park does hold the Austin City Limits Festival, which is, I think, in September usually. So there is a portion of Zilker Park that has the ACL deal, but it's a festival that they do, an outdoor festival. And it's usually 3 days, if I'm not mistaken, in the fall. It has 5 or 6 stages and it brings in all kinds of bands, and they're from all over the world, just like South by Southwest. So it does have a music tie. for the kids, they've got a little excellent, they've got a little railroad train that the kids can ride. I remember when I was a child doing that.
Excellent. What else should we see in Austin?
Well, there's a Lady Bird Wildflower Center is yes or no. It depends on if you're into that kind of thing. It's a little bit farther away from downtown, but Lady Bird Johnson was very instrumental in doing the wildflowers in Texas. I mean, she herself actually went out and dropped seeds in a lot of different highways, especially on the way to their ranch out in Johnson City, and different highways, and got a lot of people to do it too. And we probably, in my mind, have one of the best wildflower venues along interstates and along county roads and farm market roads and all that that I've ever seen. And this is a center where they kind of explain the history of her passion for wildflowers and stuff. And it's on the south side of town, and it's worth a visit.
Now, out here in California, our most popular wildflower is the California poppy. What's the big one in Texas?
You got to know the answer to that, I would hope.
I was either going to go with the yellow rose of Texas or the lupin, but I don't actually know the answer.
The bluebonnet is our state flower. It's grown, it's probably 75% of the wildflowers along the roads around Austin and in Texas all over, because it's become such a, we've associated Texas with that specific flower a lot. So it's definitely the bluebonnet.
Okay, excellent.
Another thing is, if you're downtown, I'm going to go back down there, is the Paramount Theater, which was built in 1915. It's doing its 100th year celebration this year. So if you're in town this year, it's well worth going and seeing it. They have concerts. They have shows. If you're there, if you're in town around Christmas, they always have two or three regular acts on an annual basis around Christmas, and do a one-week themed show for each of the different acts and stuff, and it's well worth it. It's funny. It's entertaining. My wife and I, when I was married, saw Phantom of the Opera down there. It's got a pretty wide and varied ability. It has a lot of rock and roll music and concerts because it's a small atmosphere. But the architecture is phenomenal. It's, like I said, it was built in 1915, so you can imagine how detailed and how ornamental it is.
Okay.
Hamilton Pool is outside of town. I think it's about a 25-minute or something like that. It's a preserve. It's a natural springs-fed pool. It's got a 50-foot waterfall on it. Doesn't have lifeguards, and you swim at your own risk. But back in the 19th century, the Tonkawa and the Lipan Apaches, I don't know if I'm saying that right, were known to reside around that area. So sometimes some people are digging in the dirt and stuff out there, or the sand, they find arrowheads and all kinds of different things that date back to the Indian culture. Mm-hmm. If you're here in the fall, I would definitely try to go see a University of Texas football game. It is one of the premier universities in the country. Obviously, football, if you live in Texas, is almost like a religion. I think on Friday nights, you're going to find, I want to say, 85% of the population at a high school football game. And on Saturday, they're either watching it at home or they're at a particular college or university game in their local area. It's like, as a young man, I know it's a rite that we all go through. I played football in junior high and high school. I blew out a knee. My three sons, all, even though their dad told them, don't do that, you're not going to like it, you're going to get hurt possibly, blah, blah, blah. Well, they all three had to do it because of the peer pressure. It's amazing. But thank God all of them, well, one of them played until his junior year, and the other two got out after their freshman year. So they weren't as inclined to keep playing the football game. But the University of Texas has a tailgating program, and it covers blocks and blocks and blocks, and I mean, it's a riot. Some of the people go there strictly for the tailgating parties. They don't even have tickets to the game. They just set up their burnt orange and white. I'm serious. It's amazing. It's like an outing type deal. The LBJ Library, if you're a historian, is here in Austin, Texas, on the university. The
Presidential Library.
Yes, the Presidential Library, excuse me.
Those are fascinating, I find. I haven't been to that one, but I highly recommend, if you're near a presidential library, to check it out. Whether or not you're a American or somebody traveling from overseas, they're wonderfully interesting.
It's interesting because we had a couch surfer that was from Australia trying to prove some point on some law that we had in place or something like that. And he stayed with us for a week while he did his research at the Elbridge Library. And then he went on to another presidential library in Georgia or Kansas. I don't know. He was doing all the most recent presidents. And I thought it was interesting that somebody from Australia would come up and spend that much time trying to research a point or a legal point in our government. There's a hike and bike trail that goes around the river downtown that is probably, I don't think I've lived all over the South. I haven't lived up north, but I've lived all over the South, and I really hadn't seen a trail like that. It handles bikes, and it handles people running and walking, and it's got trees, and it's pretty well, I think it's about 6 to 8 feet wide probably, so it'll handle everybody. And there's usually not any conflicts between because somebody's in somebody's way or whatever. It's got to be 5 miles round trip, I'll guarantee you. And people use it. And people, when they come in from out of town and visit, they always talk about going down there and doing their exercise, whatever they may be, whether it's a runner or riding a bike or just walking. It's a wonderful place to go and exercise.
Okay.
Bob Bullock Museum is downtown. It's got an IMAX 3D theater, which is currently showing humpback whales.
And is that a science museum then?
It's actually, Bob Bullock was a lieutenant governor for the state of Texas for quite a while. And it's basically a history museum.
And
talks about and everything that has to do, although the IMAX, it kind of branches out and does its own thing. But it's well worth a visit if you're interested in Texas history.
And you bring up Texas history. I'm just curious because I have heard, I've been to Austin a few times, but I hear people talk about Austin and Texas as two different things, that Austin, some parts of Austin are very Texan and some parts are very different. Now you're living somewhere else in Texas right now. What's your impression of what about Austin is like being in Texas, like high school football, and what's different?
What's different is politics.
Okay. Okay. That's what I got that impression.
Austin is very liberal and very democratic, I guess. And everything else in the state of Texas is red and conservative. So I think that's the basic difference. Things that happen in Austin wouldn't happen in most of the other parts of Texas because they're so conservative.
Like what?
And I'm not saying I'm either one.
Yeah. Okay.
A lot of the people in Austin have facial jewelry and piercings and stuff like that. And if you try to do that out in San Angelo or someplace in East Texas, they'd throw you out of town. I mean, you can't do that. I mean, it's that redneck when you get out of the Austin area. And now you could probably in Dallas to a certain extent, but you're not going to get away with it as much in Dallas as you do in Austin. Austin doesn't care. Very liberal, very laid back community. And I think Willie probably helped convince everybody to be that way when he first hit town in the 70s. That's the big difference. It's just politics. And it's almost like if the red says the sky is blue, then the blue in Austin is going to say, no, it's not. It's gray. I mean, just sometimes out of spite in my mind, it's kind of crazy, but that's the way it is, really.
What's going to surprise me when I come to Austin, if I spend a week in Austin?
Well, there's different things that you could do. I'll guarantee you that. They've just started finally recognizing SOCO, S-O-C-O, which is South Congress.
Okay.
And it's becoming a shopping venue. It's becoming a entertainment venue. It used to have, I think, 28 food trailers. And that's another thing that may surprise you is that Austin is probably one of the leading or top five cities. United States for food trailers, I'll guarantee you. And the majority of them have good food. I mean, I'll never forget when I was down at the university doing something. I don't know why I was down there, but doing something. And this food trailer was outside the building. I had to go in and I hadn't eaten lunch. So I went up and I ate this Korean taco with cabbage instead of lettuce and stuff as the filler. And I think it was some kind of kimchi meat, if I mistake, and it was just like, oh my God, this is delicious. I mean, it's something that you would think you would find in like a 3 or 4 star restaurant, not a food trailer. And a lot of the food trailers, like the best one is Franklin's Barbecue.
Oh, okay.
If you go, I mean, Texas in my mind's got two foods, Mexican food and barbecue. And that's, if you come to Texas, you've got to try various restaurants of both those styles of food.
And when you say Mexican, that's
Tex-Mex more than...
Well, some of it is, some of it isn't.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, it depends on the particular restaurant you go to. Yes, a great deal of it is Tex-Mex, but then there are many, many authentic Mexican food restaurants, and okay. One of them is one of my favorites. So, I mean, I've got a whole page of restaurants on barbecue and on Mexican food, both, because there's so many to choose from and so many that are at different price levels, blah, blah, blah. So...
Now, and you mentioned Franklin Barbecue. We can't let that go without a mention. My understanding is, and I've eaten at Franklin Barbecue. I was actually flown down by the National Pork Board to have a dinner at the Franklin Barbecue, and they bought out the whole restaurant. But I understand that normally I would have to wait in line for 3 hours.
Yeah, that's pretty close. I mean, it can be, if you get there early enough, it can be 2. If you get there at 6 a.m., I think it's, well... No, he doesn't open till 11, so it couldn't be 2. Yeah, you're going to wait 3 hours pretty well. And then, hopefully, when you get there, they're not going to say, sorry, we just ran out. Because they open at 11, and they keep serving until they literally run out. And when they run out, they're out. You have to come back the next day. So there's always that person in line who sees the person in front of them get their barbecue. And then gets told, sorry, we're out. But that's the way it is sometimes.
Well, and I'm told you should be very suspicious of a barbecue place that doesn't run out, because barbecue takes a while. So
barbecue, a good, if you're talking brisket, yes.
Yeah.
Brisket takes probably a good 12 to 15 hours.
Yeah.
If you do it right, you never want to put it directly on the fire. You got to have the fire off to the side and let the smoke and the heat come up through. And that'll give you the ring around the brisket that you see, the red around the outside of the brisket. If you put it directly on, you're going to either overcook it or undercook it, one of the two, because it's just not meant to be cooked that way. And of course, you need hickory or mesquite wood. Mm-hmm. You don't want to over oak. But a good barbecue guy like Franklin, actually, he kind of tells you that you don't really need sauce on it. And see all these people wanting sauce and pouring it all over the meat. And he says that kills the taste of it, which I think he's probably right. But he does brisket, ribs. He does a pulled pork, which most places down here don't, because it's mostly just beef. Mm-hmm. He does turkey, he does sausage. He makes a potato salad. His purple coleslaw is a vinegar base, and a lot of people use mayonnaise base, but his is a vinegar base, which personally I like better. He does real good pinto beans. I mean, he's got a bourbon banana pie and a pecan pie and a key lime pie. So he's got you set. And I guarantee you, when you walk away from there, you're going to be filled with great food, and you're not going to want to eat for another 24 hours probably. So,
now, is there a place you would recommend that doesn't have a 3-hour wait?
Oh, of course. Barbecue. Okay. Yeah, there's a place outside of town called Salt Lick. L-I-C-K, like you put out for cattle. It's in Driftwood, Texas, and it's pretty good barbecue, just to be honest with you. You don't really have to wait that long when you go out there. There's another place, a little town called Lockhart, that has probably 3 well-known. If you want to talk about a little town, I think it's got probably 18,000 to 20,000 people in it at most. And it's got Smitty's, which has been there since the turn of the century, and is used to be one of my favorite places, because you walk in through the kitchen. So you're walk right by where all the smoke's coming out. You smell it. I mean, it's a wonderful atmosphere. You walk around and they take your order and you get served on butcher paper. There's no cutlery at all. You don't get a fork and a knife. And you get, let me see, I think it's white bread and pickles and onions on the table. It's a fascinating place to go eat barbecue, and you eat off of picnic tables with own butcher paper. And like I said, you don't get to use forks or knives. They had a little family feud when the father died, and the daughter kept that place and the name Smitty's, and the son opened up a place on the edge of town called K-R-E-U-Z. Don't ask me to, I think it's Kreitz, but it's K-R-E-U-Z. And he basically cooks the same barbecue, but it's a huge complex. You don't walk through the kitchen. It's just a normal type venue. There's another place called Black's. So there's 3 different barbecue places in Lockhart that are well worth visiting. If you're in Austin and you need barbecue quickly and you're on the run or whatever you want to call it, I'd go to Rudy's, R-U-D-Y apostrophe S. They or a chain that actually is kind of quasi a convenience store. You can buy gas out front and go inside and buy a breakfast taco, but they have a phenomenal amount of business. I mean, it's amazing, and I like their barbecue. My son lives near one on 183, and every time I go down there, we go over to Rudy's and have barbecue, whether it's brisket and sausage or brisket and ribs or whatever. We have it, and it's good barbecue. My favorite, though, is Cooper's in Llano, Texas. That's about an hour, 15 minutes from Austin. They have, this is interesting because they have all these outdoor pits, and the fire's on the end where the smoke comes up through, and you go in and they have an item called a big chop, and it's basically a pork chop, and it is probably, God, I'll bet it's close to 3 inches thick.
Oh, my.
Oh, it's unbelievable. And they make a vinegar-based sauce. They don't make a ketchup-based sauce. Mm-hmm. I tell you what, when you eat that thing, you're in heaven. I mean, it's just, every time I used to go to West Texas in my retail business, I would have to stop in Llano and get me a big chop and go to town.
Now, are there other things that, if we're going to make a day of it and go out in that direction for that far, are there other things that we should do on the way to, from, or after?
Well, hopefully you'll go in the springtime when the yep. bluebonnets are blooming, and they will be all the way beside the road on Highway 71 or 29, depending on which route you take to get mm-hmm. out there. They'll be on the side of the road all the way between Austin and there. And if you don't get tempted to stop and take a few photographs, then something's wrong with you, in my opinion. Llano also has some little different shops and venues of antiques and stuff like that that a person could probably spend a couple hours walking around the little town. And I know the mayor, he's a pretty good guy too. Terry Tex, T-E-X, taller. He'll kill me to put his name in here. But anyway, he's a good guy, and it's a typical West Texas town. Barbecue, a few shops, and a bunch of deer out on the prairie around the town. If you go out there and you're there after dark in September through November, I would caution you not to go more than about 10 miles an hour because the deer are in what they call the rutting season, and they are crazy after dark. You don't want to be driving around West Texas or the Hill Country, it's called, after dark. County Line is another one here in town, but I think they've gotten a little bit, I don't know how to say this. They're kind of tried to go too far, in my opinion. They're making all this thick homemade bread, and they've just kind of gotten away from their primary purpose, in my mind. They do have decent barbecue. I don't think it's as good as the other places I've listed, but it's decent. If you can't find any other place, then yeah, County Line can be the place to go.
Anything else we should know before we get to our last three questions here about Austin?
Quick things to do that are usually not on the list. They've got a project called First Thursday, which is South Congress again. All the shops stay open until about 10 the first Thursday of each month. In addition to that, there's a place on Castle Hill where all the graffiti people go out and add to the walls and the murals that are out there, or change it or redefine it or whatever you want to call it, which is kind of cool to see that going on. Hmm. We have Circuit of the Americas if you're into Grand Prix racing, that happens once a year. Texas State Cemetery has all the people. I don't know if it has, I think it has Stephen F. Austin and all the Texas historical people buried there. Enchanted Rock, if you want to get into rock climbing, it's kind of a beginner's rock, is out in the Hill Country, which is a beautiful place to go to. Oh, there's a little downtown. If you are inclined to imbibe in beer, there's a deal called a pub crawler where I think it holds 12 people, and you basically pump, and it moves this little vehicle. You pump like a bicycle. And it moves this little crawler around town, and you hit a couple of bars. And as you're going, you get beers pulled because you're pumping the vehicle to move, and it also lets the beer flow through, which is kind of a different, unique way to do it. Oh, there's, if you like roller derby, the old airport here has roller derby.
And I'm not sure that all our non-American listeners know roller derby.
To the best of my ability, what we're talking about is men and women's teams. They're separated by gender, where they go around a rink that I'm going to guess in about 100 feet long and probably 250 to 300 feet in circular motion. And they wear elbow pads and helmets and stuff. And their basic objective is for a member of their team to get past everybody on the other team. Now, mm-hmm. it's the objective of the other team on defense, or whatever you want to call it, to knock these people down with their elbows and with everything else that they got. They can bump them over the rail if they run into them from the side. And it's pretty heavy action or oriented sport. But
it always felt like pro wrestling meets roller skating.
On wheels. Yeah, exactly. That, I think that's a great description. You're right. And they do it with male and women both. And some of the women are pretty darn tough. They get out there. So,
yeah, you mentioned Mexican food, too.
Yeah, Mexican food is equal to barbecue in Texas. It's got all kinds of wonderful restaurants in town. My favorite is Guero's. It's down on South Congress. And I think every president in the last 20 years has eaten there. Some of them have dishes named after them. It's amazing. But it's probably more Tex-Mex, like you were talking about mm-hmm. earlier, than true Mexican food, because it does have a lot of spicy salsas and spicy flavorings on the enchiladas and different entrees.
Mm-hmm. Hey, don't get me wrong when I say Tex-Mex versus Mexican. I like Tex-Mex. I like a good fajita, but it's not really Mexican.
No, so. Mexican food is really a little bit, to be honest with you, more bland than Tex-Mex. Tex-Mex is a lot more spicy, in my opinion. That's just my opinion. Mm-hmm. We have a place called One in a Million. If you like breakfast tacos, they open at 7. They shut down at 3. It was featured on Man versus Food.
Okay.
Every taco that they put out weighs 3/4 of a pound.
Oh, good grief.
And there's couples that can't finish one. Well, he ate 4 1/4 tacos, actually, which he's trying to break the record, which was 8, but he can't do it. He couldn't do it. And that's called the Don Juan taco. The record is 8. And Juan Mesa, who is an ex-school teacher, opened it, God, I think back in 1980. And it's funny because he greets every person that comes in the door. I mean, gives them a handshake, and he does not ever miss anybody. So if you go there and don't get your handshake, then I'm going to be very surprised. Chewy's is another place that's based here in Austin, and it's kind of a Austin has this phrase called "Keep Austin Weird," which the rest of the state agrees with 100%, and some of the locals like it that live in Austin, and they have little statues of Elvis Presley and all kinds of just different things that you wouldn't think you'd find in a Mexican food restaurant, but they do a pretty good job at Mexican food. High end, you've got Fonda San Miguel downtown with Rellenos, which is basically a pepper chili relleno. They stuff with different meats and things. There's a taco chain called Torchy's Taco, which really gets out, and they do wonderful tacos, basically. My son turned me onto that, and a lot of the places my middle son turned me onto, because he's kind of a foodie like I am, but they put everything together that you can think of. I mean, chipotle sauce, carnitas, pico de gallo, cojito cheese, which is a fresh Mexican cheese. And
that's the white cheese.
Yeah, exactly. And they put all kinds of combinations together that you will not find in most restaurants. And it's very neat to go in there and experiment and try different tacos. My Mexican food place is called Taqueria Guadalajara and is located on Ranch Road 620 on the northwest side of Austin and barely in Travis County still. And it's a little chain of about 4 or 5 that I think may have 15 tables, if that. And they turn the people pretty rapidly. But when you go in, they have all kinds of different sauces. And their plates are really not as spicy as a Tex-Mex place. So if you like authentic Mexican food at a very low price, Taqueria Guadalajara is what I'd recommend. We used to have one called Dario's. It was down on 6th Street on the east side of 35, but it closed about a year and a half ago. But it's still on the list of places to go and eat Mexican food. I was looking through the list yesterday, and I said, oh, my God, I can't believe it. It was fantastic. So anyway, if you like French or kind of continental food, I'd hit Justine's, Olive and June, and Fabi and Rossi, F-A-B-I and R-O-S-I. And those are my middle son, Sean's, recommendations. And everyone that I've been to or gone with him, it's been phenomenal food. So excellent. The other thing is seafood. They have a chain called Trulux. And I don't think that's countrywide. I think it may be just based in Texas, but it may be spreading. But they have stone crab claws. And oh, my God. You want to talk about a dish that gets to me, it's stone crab claws, and they do a wonderful job. So true lux. And I'll stop there on the food.
You're standing in the prettiest spot in all of Austin. Where are you standing and what are you looking at?
I'm probably going to be sitting at a restaurant.
You are consistent, sir.
It's called the Oasis, and it overlooks Lake Travis, and it's up on the side of the hill. And you're going to be watching the sunset out over Lake Travis when it's full. It had a problem the last 2 years with not enough rain, but I think probably the rain that they've been getting, it's gone back to its natural setting. And it is one of the most gorgeous things to see when the sun sets over the back of the lake and you see that light coming across the lake while you're eating or having a margarita or a cold beer or something to go with your meal. It's just, it's fantastic. So that would be my recommendation.
Excellent. And we managed to get through a whole show without mentioning that Austin is also the capital of Texas.
It definitely is, and that would be one of the historical buildings that I'd recommend you go see. I'm kind of a history nut, and I like going to see all those type of buildings like the Driscoll Hotel. Mm-hmm. It was made a long time ago by the ranch guy, or the cattle guy, and you go into that place, it's phenomenal. But the Capitol has got the Star of Texas and stuff on their door handles, on their hinges on the doors. I mean, it's just it's amazing how deep they go in with the Texas detail.
Well, and I'm curious to hear your answer for this one, given we talked about keeping Austin weird. One thing that makes you laugh and say only in Austin?
Probably the street musicians. I don't think you're going to find street musicians just performing on the curb or in front of a shop or in front of a venue, a bar or something like they do on 6th Street. You're not going to find that in Dallas or Fort Worth or Houston because they wouldn't allow it. And Austin, since their tag kind of is the music capital of the world, they allow it, and it doesn't matter where you are or what you're doing. You're going to run across people playing music right there on the sidewalk, and you know you're in Austin because nobody else in the state allows it.
Last question, then. You had to summarize Austin in only three words. What three words would you use?
I see. That would be keep it weird.
Excellent. Excellent. What other three words could you possibly have chosen, sir? Our guest again has been Mike Hinshaw from NomadicTexan.com. Mike, what can people read about on your site? What's the most interesting post you've written recently?
Most interesting and probably surprising to a lot of the people that follow me and stuff is the Just One Rhino post that I wrote.
Oh, sure.
Part of the 120 bloggers or travel writers or whatever we're going to be called today, because that's a big topic these days, that I wrote to try to help save the one rhino. And it was written back on my birthday, February the 24th. I chose that date when Brett Love put the calendar out because I knew it was my birthday and I wouldn't forget it since it was my birthday. But think about the rhinoceros. It's a dinosaur and it's been around for thousands of years, I believe, maybe only hundreds, but it's been around for a long time. And we're almost out of them. I mean, we have just about eliminated this species. And it's really critical that people stop the plundering of the rhinoceros because of their horns. I mean, it's crazy that people want to get that. So anyway, that would be my most recent one. If you want to go back a little farther, I was on a trip in Thailand, Malaysia for about 2 weeks that go into that. I was in Japan last December, so... And I haven't written yet, but I just got out of Spain for a couple, 3 weeks, and there will be posts to come in Spain.
Excellent. Our guest again has been Mike Hinshaw. Thanks so much, Mike, for coming on The Amateur Traveler and sharing with us your love of Austin.
Well, I appreciate it, Chris, and I hope you have a fantastic week.
In the community section of our news, remember that it is 2 weeks until the 10-year anniversary of Amateur Traveler. You're going to want to listen to that episode. I think I'm going to have an announcement for you in that episode. A shout out in this episode to Bronna McNamara, who I met last month or the month before at a conference in Spain. She came up to me and told me she'd actually gotten into travel because of the Amateur Traveler. And that is one of the coolest things I've ever heard. I got an email from Mark who said, I just wanted to shoot you a quick email to thank you for the awesome Amateur Traveler podcast. I only recently got into podcasts during my daily exercise routine. And as I'm a very avid traveler, I travel about 200,000 miles a year, found your podcast after doing a search on my iPhone. Your podcasts are professional, insightful, and encapsulate the essence of the destination being discussed. And I find it truly fascinating to hear your podcasts both about places that I've already been to, as well as my appetite for places that I long to go in the future. I literally downloaded every podcast in the iTunes collection, which starts with number 30, and I'm currently up to 111, Mongolia, as well as up to date on your current weekly podcasts produced over the last few weeks. Well, that is impressive, and I can only hope, Mark, you'll find that they get better as you go along. Certainly the production value of the podcast has improved a bit over the last 10 years, and you're only up to year 2.5 there at 111, because we've done it almost exactly 48 episodes a year for the last 10 years. With that, we're going to end this episode of The Amateur Traveler. If you have any questions, send an email to host@amateurtraveler.com. Or better yet, leave a comment on this episode at amateurtraveler.com. You can follow me on Twitter, Instagram, or Pinterest, all at Chris2X. And as always, thanks so much for listening.